Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. I'm Sam Minter. I'm recording at just about 22:30 UTC on Friday, December 27th, 2013. We don't have Yvonne today. Let's see. On Saturday, I let Yvonne know that our regular recording time, I'd be on a train. I suggested a couple other times. Yvonne picked one. Then Monday, he realized he'd pick Christmas Eve, and that wouldn't work because he'd be doing family things. Then we chose to do the show early on Friday, UTC, you know, Thursday evening. But Yvonne got held up and wasn't able to make it home. So now it's Friday. It's time to get a show out. It's actually later than I usually get shows out. And there was no time to set up a backup co-host. So here I am doing a solo show. Although Alex is climbing next to me and might have things to say. He sometimes has things to say.
Choo-choo trains.
Yeah, he says choo-choo trains. It's been a long time since I've done a solo show. But in the meantime, I have gotten some feedback against the kind of free-form rambling that I've done most recently when I've done the show alone. So I'm going back and trying something I did a few years ago on the solo shows, but I haven't done lately. Namely, I'm planning out... I'm even sort of scripting the show, scripting what I would say in advance. I'm not following what I've written word for word, but I wrote out what I generally wanted to say. So let me know what you all think. Or is this show just hopeless without a co-host, no matter what I do, and I should try more desperately to make sure I always have somebody with me? And I don't just mean Alex, who right now is climbing on the windowsill up onto a bookshelf next to me. Yeah. You should get down. He says no, he's not getting down. For anybody wondering, all the windows are closed. There are no screens there, nothing like that. But he is standing on top of the bookshelf with his head touching the ceiling. You shouldn't do that, guy. Yeah, come on down. What you doing up there? You're getting the turret. Okay. He's getting some of my decorations down. Okay, come on down. Yeah, getting down's harder, isn't it? Careful. Oh, good job. Good job. You got it. Okay. Anyway, as Alex is slowly getting down, what are the topics for today? First up, I'm going to talk just a little bit about the holidays. Second, something I've been meaning to talk about or post about for... many months. I was actually thinking for the longest time it would be like a blog post or a blog post series, but I'll talk about it here on the podcast. And that's tenets. That is, if for those of you who haven't heard the term, short statements or axioms about beliefs. So I'm just going to... I've thought about a little bit about... Oh, don't drop that. Thank you for giving that to me. About what are sort of some of my own political tenets. And I thought I'd throw some out and maybe start some discussion or, you know, get some feedback on mine or have people share theirs or whatever. We'll see how that goes. And third, some thoughts about the last year as it draws to a close. And that should be more than enough for a solo show, right? Because, you know, you guys don't want these to be super, super long. Of course, I always say this is a solo show. It's going to be really short, and I'm thinking it's going to be 15 minutes, and I end up yammering for an hour anyway. But anyway, with that, let's take our first break. We'll be back after this.
Thank you
for using your conference account information.
Okay. After a brief interlude of calling my wife to extract Alex from the windowsill where he'd taken my microphone up to the very top of a shelf so that only he could talk into it and not me, after that, I have retrieved my microphone. Alex is now downstairs with my wife, and we're on to the next segment. And it's about the holidays. Where to start? I'm not a Christian. My mother is a Protestant. My mother is a Protestant minister in the United Church of Christ. But around age 13, when it was time for my confirmation, I realized that in order to say the things and pledge the things that were asked of me in the confirmation process, I would basically be lying. I just did not believe those things. I used to name myself an agnostic, but over the years, the reality is much more than I'm really an atheist. I mean, I am. But what I reject are the specific dogmas that are present, even in the more liberal religious traditions like my mother's denomination, which is very inclusive and allows all kinds of different ways for people to come to faith and blah, 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 and isn't very dogmatic at all. But even there, this sort of, you know, you go to the service and they still talk about God and Jesus, okay? And I understand a lot of these things are best interpreted as metaphor, but I'm really much more comfortable just directly addressing issues without layers of confounding metaphor that to me cloud the issue and can easily be read by many listening to not be a metaphor but actually be direct representations of truth. And this is where, like, if it is considered sort of a direct representation of truth, I start getting very uncomfortable with it. If it's just like, hey, we just happen to be using the Jesus stories as a parable on how to be good to each other, oh, okay, whatever, but there are thousands of other different stories you could tell instead. Why do you obsess on that one? Anyway, that center that is at the heart of most religions, almost all religions, I think, is just basically be good to each other. That rings very true. And of course, I try to live my life as a good and caring person. But all those trappings that surround religion have always bothered me. The specific stories, the rituals, the this, the that, the that. You know, I don't begrudge those at all for those who receive value and spiritual sustenance from them. If believing something that I don't happen to believe makes you a better person or helps you feel better about your life or helps you get through hard times, then awesome. All for the better. Whatever works, as long as it's not harming anybody. And yes, some certain particular beliefs held by some certainly do end up harming people. But we'll leave that discussion for another time. There are lots of organized religions out there who are a very positive influence on their members, give their members meaning and a sense of purpose and encourage them to be better people. And I'm all for that. Anyway, despite being so skeptical of organized religion and not being a Christian and not, you know, worshiping Jesus or anything that sort of the traditional religious meaning of the holiday, and I guess people would say you're not actually worshiping Jesus, you're worshiping God who's embodied in Jesus, whatever, you know, I don't want to get into the theological debate. Anyway, despite all that, I still celebrate the Christmas season. Always do. And yes, you know, I participate in all the crass commercialism and the excessive consumerism and all the gift giving. Christmas is always a major, major annual expense in our family, way more than it probably should be. I mean, it's like, you know, I look at the bills in December and, you know, they're big, you know, but it's not about that either, or Santa, or any of those kinds of things. And it seems kind of trite to say it because everybody kind of knows it and you hear people saying it all the time. But of course, what the season is really about, I should just say, at least for me, is about family. It's about taking the time to, for just a little bit, get away from all the hustle and bustle and slow down. to just be quiet and spend some time with the ones you love. Speaking of ones I love, Alex is back. Hello, Alex. What's up? Anyway, in the past, you know, I've almost never actually taken time off over the holidays. I figured that the week between Christmas and New Year's was a quiet time at work. Can you close the door, Alex? Close the door. Oh, anyway. I figured it's a quiet time at work. Can you close the door, Amy?
Yeah, I got it.
Thank you. I figured it's a quiet time at work. And I'd catch, you know, thing, take it a bit slow at work, perhaps do a bunch of working from home. But yeah, I would work and I would catch up on things there. This year, though, I felt tired. And Alex is back again. Alex! Okay, let's at least close the door. Closing the door. He's here with a train to play with. Anyway, this year, I was tired. I felt like I needed some time. I actually took off the entire week of Christmas. And the days leading up to New Year as well. I'm not going back to work until the 2nd. And even here at home, aside from, you know, some cleaning to get ready for the Christmas morning presents and all that, I haven't even been working on any of the projects I have at home that have been building up for years. I haven't done any of this 2016 election stuff. I haven't done any playing with my genealogy stuff. I haven't, you know, been organizing my office or, you know, cleaning up some of the stuff that has to be cleaned up elsewhere in the house that's a disaster. You know, I've just been, there are tons of those things that I'd love to spend time on. I want to spend time on. Yeah, there are work things I need to... I'm always behind at work. There's always too much stuff to do at work. It's plenty for me to do there, and I feel kind of guilty for not doing it. And there are all these personal projects.
Daddy, yeah. And there's presents.
There's more presents?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll look at them later. But
Daddy, you open them now.
Not right now.
Yes. Very quick. Again.
Very quick. Oh, okay, let me open this up. This one?
No, that's no.
This one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Take and Play Thomas Shark set. Thank you so much for the present. What? It's the third time you've given it to me. I like it very much. And a Lego train. Very nice. Anyway, I haven't done any of those sort of productive projects, either work or home. Instead, as you just heard, I've been playing with my son. Hours playing with trains. Hours running around in roughhousing. And, you know, just hours of a 4-year-old's laughter and joy. You know, it's like he's so happy. And I get to spend the time with that. Close the door when you leave. Of course he won't. Instead, my wife closed the door. Instead, I've been watching movies and TV shows with my wife and daughter that we enjoy together. This evening, I'm going to be playing a 2-player video game with my daughter that we've been planning to do for ages and ages. Over a year, I think. But it's always been put off for one reason or another. She's busy, I'm busy, we don't have the right setup in place, whatever. We're going to actually do it now. For anybody wondering, it's the co-op mode in Portal 2, which came out like years ago. But we said at the very beginning, we'll do the co-op mode together. She wasn't going to play it with anybody else. And we're finally going to do it, I think. Like right after I get this podcast out. Just in general, I've just spent time being slow, relaxing, not worrying, kicking back. Enjoying being with the family, you know, and it's been great. It's been wonderful. I should do it more often. I wish I could do it all the time.
I hope all of you out there, you know, regardless of which holidays you do or do not celebrate, what the reasons are for you celebrating or not celebrating, and regardless of your inclinations towards the religious or the secular or whatever, just take some time periodically to press pause on the constant movement of daily life and just breathe, slow down, and enjoy the good things around you. 'Tis the season, after all. We'll be back in another moment. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, I'm back. So, during that last break, Alex came back in, and he was crawling around again, and he was jumping up and climbing on the thing, and he was in here listening while I was reviewing the last segment, and he knocked a bookend off the shelf onto my iPad and smashed the screen. For those of you who've been listening the last couple weeks, you realize the screen was smashed just a few weeks ago, and we had the second of our two allowed $50 replacements for that screen. So that means the next replacement is full price, which I looked up. It's $250. It was a complete accident. And he's very upset. He's crying. He cried for like 10 minutes. He's now downstairs with his sister and his mother. But he's very, very upset that he broke the iPad. And so it goes. Anyway, so that's that. I'll deal with that later. And I feel really bad because he's so sad. And I could have pulled him down earlier. Oh my. Or of course the iPad could have been somewhere else, but he just put the iPad down. He just brought it in here, put it down on the table, and then was crawling around, and just something got knocked off. Complete accident. He's very upset. And anyway, it's sad, but we'll deal with it. Moving on. Tenets. Quickly Googling the word, it has this definition. A principle or belief, especially one of the main principles of a religion or philosophy. Now, we've actually used these in the work context to define sort of the core principles of a project or a team. But what happened was, when I was watching various political discussions or one sort or another, or when I was at places where they were talking political stuff, which you know me, happens on a fairly regular basis. I watch a bunch of these things. And anyway, I kept thinking that maybe I should try to write down some of my own tenets that define how I think about sort of political issues. And maybe more generally about life, but specifically about political issues. And so I started jotting them down occasionally as I thought of them. I did this over a course of a few months. Then, quite frankly, I forgot about them for months and months and months. But the interesting bit about these kinds of things is when you look at people having political debates, it can often be very frustrating because you realize that the people are talking completely past each other, each one coming from a different place, completely unconvinced by any facts presented by the other side. And there are a few different reasons for this. Sometimes, and actually fairly commonly, this is because what's really happening are people are sort of just dividing into, for lack of a better word, tribes, where the specific political debates are almost completely just after-the-fact justifications for defending the interests of their own group. It's not really coming from some sort of core political beliefs about the way things should be or the way things should be organized. It's all just about what particular set of things that I could advocate would push forward the interests of my group right now. And one prime example is, you know, we've had this filibuster thing in the last few months. Just recently, the change in the filibuster rules, but more generally, the filibuster has been talked about for years and years. But what you'll notice when you look at the debate is who thinks it's bad and who thinks it's an important power to protect the rights of the minority depends almost completely about which party happens to be in power at the time. There are very few people out there who have a core principle belief about how the system should be organized and whether or not you should require supermajorities for certain things. I'm sure such people exist. But when you hear the debate, it's not about that at all. It's about, you know, the filibuster is being used to stop my priorities, or the filibuster is being used to keep the current majority from doing things that are against my priorities. And it's not about the ultimate good or bad of having things organized in a way that a filibuster exists. It's about the specific issues on the table at the time and what you think about them and who's on what side and who's got the power of the filibuster at the time. And that's what I mean by tribes. And there are very, very often other factors of that where even if you take sort of core red-blue issues and you start digging beneath the surface, you find out that there isn't really sort of a principled conversation or a principled thought process of this is why I believe what it is, what I do. It's very much more often, I believe this is the way I do because this is the way I was brought up and this is how everybody I know thinks. And sure, you can come up with all kinds of rational sounding things, but most of them are after the fact justifications. You have the viewpoint first and then you find reasons for it as opposed to coming to the viewpoint through some sort of rational process. That's very, very common. But some of the time, there actually is a debate on sort of the underlying issues. But even then, there's a complete disconnect, very often. And this is because fundamentally how you evaluate questions of policy or politics comes down to basic axioms you hold about what's right and what's wrong. And these aren't things that are provable through some sort of rational process. They aren't things that you can just convince somebody on through some sort of argument. If you can, you probably haven't actually gotten down to the core axioms that are held yet. Or maybe the people just didn't hold them very closely because lots of people actually are, you know, there are certain things that matter to them, but not super deeply. But even if you believe in some sort of utilitarian political philosophy where you do whatever needs to be done to maximize the overall good, and I put that in air quotes, you still have different people with different assumptions on what good is. And even if you agree on some metric that you want to maximize, you'll still disagree on what types of actions are allowed and which are not on your quest to maximize that good. Almost everybody agrees that there are certain types of things that, you know, are off limits, even if they're the best way or even the only way to get to some future state that everybody agrees would be wonderful, because it's just the act in itself is bad. So even if it has good results, you don't want to go there. Or do the ends actually justify the means? And you know, some people would say they do, but most people would say that the ends may justify some means, but yeah, there are certain things that are beyond the pale that you just never do regardless. And people have very different answers to those debates. And that's where the tenets come in. And I thought it would be useful to state explicitly some of the tenets that I jotted down when I was jotting them down. It might explain some of what I think about some things. And, yeah, look, I'll admit up front, these aren't all fully thought out. These are things I jotted down in spare moments when they came to mind. Some of them are probably even contradictory to each other, and the list is by no means complete. I'm sure if I sat down, I could think of more, but maybe it's a good place to start a discussion. I'll also say it's very tempting on each one of these to spend several minutes talking about it and my thoughts on it and why I think that and elaborating a little bit. But I'll just list them for now. And frankly, some of that extra discussion may be pointless because, like I said, some of these things are just, you know, I have the belief first and then the reasons sort of come after the fact to justify it rather than these things being, and I guess fundamentally, the reason they're tenets is that they are sort of core things for me. They're not things that I come to through some sort of process of, if this is true, this will result in some good that's later, or if you do this, then you get to something else. No, these are sort of the core things that I start from when evaluating other things. Well, it's close to the core things you can get on things you jotted down in spare moments and didn't spend a lot of time thinking about. Someday maybe I'll have time to do that. But anyway, I won't elaborate. I'll just list these for the moment. They're 13 at the moment. These are in no particular order other than when they popped into my head after I started writing them down. So let's get going. Number one, intellectual property is a bogus concept and should be rolled back as much as possible. You see what I mean? Like, we could have like a half hour debate just on that one. And there are all kinds of arguments, you know, that you could have there. It'd be a very interesting thing to talk about. Anyway, and a lot of you will be like, that's bullshit. Anyway, I'll avoid that. Let's move on. Number two, policies should be evaluated by empirical data whenever possible. Number three, concentration of power leads to corruption and abuse and should be minimized. Number four, power is power, and the same concern exists for both private and public sector power. Number five, decisions and policy should be made at the smallest scale practical. So personal, family, local. But many things still have to be done at a larger scale to be effective. That could be state, that could be national, and yes, that could even be world. Number six, decisions and policy should be made on as distributed fashion as possible. Number seven, one person alone should never be entrusted with decisions that affect many. Number eight, checks and balances are vital and should be strong, especially when that obstructs quick action. Number nine, majority rule for trivial things, supermajorities for really important things. Number 10, layers insulating policymaking from majority rule are important. Direct democracies are not desirable. The right way to construct those intermediary layers is very debatable, though. Point number 11. People who disagree with me are not evil. And understanding why they believe what they do is important. And they might actually convince me they're right. Number 12, when considering policy, one should fight common cognitive biases, not encourage them. Just as one example, 10 deaths separately is not more significant than 10 deaths together. And common risks should not be discounted versus uncommon risks. Number 13, some things shouldn't be done no matter how big a majority thinks they should be. The problem, of course, is determining what those things are. How do you decide, if not by some sort of democratic or consensus-based system? There's probably almost nothing that everybody would actually agree is off-limits. And that's the core problem. My only solution at this point is to make me king of the planet. Or not. I don't want that job. Anyway, just kidding. I believe there are things in this category, but I really don't have a solution on how to decide what they are. Even while reading these, I'm thinking of more. I just added number 13 today, and I know that there probably should be more on my personal list, but enough for now. Also, you'll notice, if you look at that, almost all of them were tenets about how you should organize government, not tenets about specific policies on what should or shouldn't be done. And, you know, and I've always considered to myself that I am one of those process hawks who I actually care more that the process used to come to a decision is the correct process than I do about what the decision is at the end. Because I think that it's important to set up the right process that enables good decision making. And sometimes it'll make wrong decisions, sometimes it'll make right decisions, and it'll certainly make decisions that I disagree with. But sometimes, I guess this could be another tenet. Sometimes the right thing to do overall is not the thing that I wish to happen, because other people's interests also have weight in that decision, not just mine. So there could be something that would be the best possible thing for me that I think is the right thing, but almost everybody disagrees with me. Guess what? The right thing to have happen probably is not the thing I want. It's probably what everybody else wants, even if I disagree with them. Anyway, that's my list for now. And I've just found this an interesting exercise, and I should pick it up again. Like I said, I did this for a couple months and then I sort of stopped. But I should just, whenever something pops to mind of like, you know, when you're discussing a political issue or even a personal issue, what is making me think, what is the core principle that is making me decide the way I'm deciding on what I think is the right action to take? And jot it down. Not the specific issue, but what's the underlying principle that you're using to make the decision? And I've just found writing some of these down helps to clarify thoughts a little bit. And so, anyway, I thought it was useful. I encourage those of you listening to send me any thoughts you have. Yeah, we always ask for feedback, and we occasionally get it. But please, out there, guys, send me some thoughts. Do you agree on these? Do you think I'm out of my mind? Do you think you have some? Do you have some of your own you'd like to share? I'm sure everybody's list is a bit different. And if you leave the public realm and dive into personal behavior, I'm sure there'd be even more. And like I said, most of what I did was on the organization of government and decision making. There's probably a whole realm of others when you start talking about actual policies and what should or should not be done. And it's very interesting to me that mine are all about the way of making the decision rather than what the issues and decisions are. But it's going to be different for different people. But, you know, in the end, do like a lot of these things just boil down to the golden rule? You know, basically that you should treat others in the way you'd like to be treated yourself? Maybe. But the problem with that is, of course, that different people actually wish to be treated differently. You know, the way I wish to be treated is very different than the way lots of other people wish to be treated. I mean, not in general, you can say everybody wants people to be nice to them. But when you start talking more specifics, you know, what kinds of behavior you expect and what's normal and what you would like, and, you know, is very different depending on who you talk to. And not to mention a rule like that's that general. Do unto others, blah, 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 is very vague. So I think it helps to add a lot of, well, more specificity anyway. Anyway, I'd love to hear back from you. What are your own personal tenets? I should ask Yvonne this question. I'd love to hear what his are. But what are your own personal tenets? Send me stuff. Send me stuff. I think this is an interesting thing to talk about. Or am I out of my mind? Is it completely boring? Anyway, I like this sort of underlying theory stuff a lot better than debates on specific issues. Like, what are the basic principles that make you come to the decisions that you do? Or is it really all just about tribe? This is the way I do it because this is the way my family has done it. This is the way my friends have done it. And there's no underlying rational process there. It's just, this is the way it is because it's the right way because that's how I was brought up. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Bye bye. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, I'm back. Two things happened during that last break. One, I looked up the prices of replacing the iPad screen again and found out that the $250 I'd looked up earlier was for like the iPad 2, older iPads. And actually, for the one I have, it's going to be $299. So, erg. Ah. Yeah, that'll be nice. Anyway, the second thing that happened is I recorded this whole segment. And then discovered that my microphone wasn't working. Yeah, that's also fun. So I'm going to do it again. Yeah, and I wanted to move on to other things. I got other things to do tonight. But there you go. Okay, so this last segment was going to be a sort of overview of some things from 2013. I don't have a calendar summary in front of me. I Googled for a few sort of 2013 summary kinds of things. Oh yeah, I should mention. I'm distracted again. My microphone, I couldn't get it to work again. My little blue snowball microphone, I tried several times, and just nothing coming out of it. So hopefully the microphone itself isn't dead, because that would just be wonderful. So I'm using the internal mic on the computer now. So if it sounds a little bit different, that's why. Anyway, I looked for some of those 2013 and review things. I found a few, but none that were really exciting me. So... And I didn't really want to go down a list like that anyway. So just a few top of my head impressions anyway. And, you guys missed the first time I did it, which was probably like more natural and would be much more insightful and better than whatever you hear now. So, you know, if I say anything stupid, blame it completely on the fact that I said the right things the right way the first time around and I lost them. Now, of course... Unlike most normal shows, I'm actually operating from essentially a script here, but the reality is I go off script a lot. Like, I'll read, like, a little bit here, and then I'll, like, just go off on a tangent for a couple minutes. So, whatever. Anyway, issue number one, Snowden. You know, you can't even have this kind of conversation without talking about Edward Snowden. You know, those of you who've been listening know that I'm pretty much 100% in the Snowden did the right thing and is a hero camp rather than one of those who demonize him and think he's evil and a traitor and all of this kind of stuff. Now, that doesn't mean, like, he can still be a criminal. He broke laws. But... I believe sometimes you have to break laws in order to do the right thing. You know, hey, that should be one of the tenets from the last segment. But I think this is one of those cases. I fundamentally believe in the disinfecting effects of sunlight and the poisonous effects of secrecy. I believe the government should not be doing things in secret that a significant portion of the population would object to, even if a majority would support it. If an issue or an action is at all controversial, it should be debated publicly, in full, and decided on through an open democratic process. I mean, hell, we may still have decided on all this kind of stuff the NSA has been doing. I mean, the public seems to support it. But you should go through that process. You should never, ever, ever
led a small group of individuals make critically important decisions wrapped up in layers of classification and secrecy. If it's really the right thing to do, then you can decide it openly. You know, if making it known widely would make it impossible, and certainly that's the claim on some of these things, then maybe you just shouldn't be doing it anyway. There are other ways. And, you know, this ties back into the tenants conversation again. You know, are there things that are beyond the pale that even if it's the right, not right thing, even if it's the only way or the best way to achieve some goal, in this case, you know, keep the country safe from terrorism, are there some things we shouldn't do anyway? And say, you know, this is just a bad thing to do. And yes, maybe it would make us safer, but we still shouldn't do it. And we should eat the cost of being a little bit less safe because we don't want to do these things. I certainly think that. Clearly, there are lots of people who don't think that. And that's even taking for granted that these things are actually effective. If they're not effective, you don't even have that argument. But I would certainly be one of those people that says, yes, 9/11 was horrible. Yes, the inevitable next 9/11 will be horrible, maybe even worse. But these things are horrible too. The kind of pernicious surveillance is just something that gives government potential power. And yes, there's lots of evidence that they aren't necessarily abusing this power today. Maybe they are in some isolated cases, but grant for the moment the argument that for the most part they're not abusing these powers. In the future, they might. And so you need to have a culture where these things are just unacceptable. And if you find out that they're happening, people get fired. And if they really, really, truly, truly are necessary, you need to have a situation where everybody agrees and you have all kinds of oversight. And yes, I think most of these things should be known by the public. You know, there probably is a place for some secrets. But it should be extremely limited, used only in the most critical emergencies. And yes, there should be standard policies that ensure that everything is made public at some later time. And not that much later. None of this after everybody is dead sort of thing that lets secrets stay secrets for decades. Secrets? Secrets. You know, I've been doing this too long. Let secrets stay secrets for decades. No. You don't want things that are secret for 50 years. No. And just to be clear, I'm talking about secrets about what the government is doing here, not private information. I think there is a different class there. Like, I'm not suggesting that the government should release everybody's tax returns publicly because we don't want to keep tax returns secret. You know, I'm not suggesting that the government fully release all payroll records of every and reviews and personnel comments of every single government employee. I don't think that's part of what's we're talking about here. There's a difference between keeping private certain information and keeping secret fundamentally what the government is doing in our name. Like, it would be perfectly okay for if the government was doing certain surveillance to keep the actual information that was surveilled secret or private. But the fact that they're doing that surveillance should not be secret. Anyway, I don't know what Time was thinking not going with Snowden for Man of the Year, but they've been kind of bogus for decades on that, so who cares? But clearly this had a major effect. It's unclear at this point what will actually change and what won't. Many things may not change, But as Snowden said in his most recent interview with the Washington Post, he
Washington Post.
Hi, Alex. Yes, Washington Post.
Washington Post.
Yes, Washington Post. Snowden considers Washington. That his efforts have been a success at this point. Because we are having this debate. We're talking about it publicly. And regardless of what the decisions are in the end, this is happening. And there are changes happening. You know, I'm sure that whatever actually ends up changing will not satisfy me. I'm fairly radical in my stance. But
not me either.
And not Alex either.
We are going to play a proto game.
Not right now, Alex. Let me finish. But we
I've got to talk to Yvonne.
Yvonne's not here. I'm talking to myself.
I wanted to talk to him.
Yeah, but Yvonne's not here today. He couldn't make it. So I'm just talking.
Why?
I don't know why.
Can you call?
Not right now.
No.
Alex? Alex? Okay, hold on. I'm pausing for a second. Beep, beep, beep. See, I don't have those nifty sound effects to add in anymore, or at least not as easily, because I'm not using GarageBand anymore that had a whole library of those, so I just go beep, beep, beep. So we had a quick break there. Alex, I took him downstairs, then he came back, and then he was here while I was, you know, getting that last little bit in place, and now he's left again. Where the hell was I? It's so confusing. Was I done with secrets? Let's just assume I was done with secrets. Snowden was important. Oh, I was saying, it's unclear what'll really happen here. But things are moving. And certainly things are happening that would never have been happening if it wasn't for the Snowden revelations. So, let's move on. Because at this point, I'm so confused. I don't know what I've already said and what I haven't said and blah, blah, blah. Because, of course, this is the second time I'm running through all these. Anyway. Oh, God. Syria. Syria is still a mess, too. Obviously, Assad is still there. But I'm pretty convinced it would have been a much worse mess if we'd become actively involved militarily ourselves. Instead, essentially by mistake, you know, we made some level of diplomatic progress. Some chemical weapons have been removed. But look, the reality is a horrible, horrible civil war continues. It would be great for that to end. But I fundamentally think outside intervention is only can make things worse in this and other situations around the world. Yet, unfortunately, some of these things, it seems like they just have to play themselves out. Because in the end, the people on the ground have to decide they no longer want to use violence as an attempted solution. You know, if we had a wonderful magic wand to wave and just fix things and make places like Syria and, you know, the probably half a dozen to a dozen other conflict areas around the world just magically turn into peaceful and thriving places, that would be awesome. That'd be wonderful. We should use it right away. But I don't think any such magic wand exists. The tendency is much more towards whenever outside powers intervene, it ends up just prolonging the agony. You insert weapons into a situation, guess what? More people die. You insert money into a situation, guess what? It just lasts longer. Yet certainly, if you intervene yourself, you end up just making additional enemies for decades to come. I unfortunately think the best long-term solution is to do nothing. Maybe some economic isolation kind of stuff. Maybe some restrictions on movement in and out of that area. I don't know. Maybe you can starve the conflict the same way you smother a fire. by just denying resources to the whole region? I don't know. But certainly, you know, supporting one side or another of the war, sending in weapons, sending in money, sending in certainly bombing things, that's just going to make things worse. So I'm glad we didn't end up going there, despite sort of the completely messed up, botched way we ended up getting there. Which certainly, if Obama can pull any kind of success out of that, it's pure luck. They were completely going down the road of screwing everything up. And, you know, what we got is what we got. Next up, Iran. Oh, and my computer is telling me it's now 1 UTC, which, by the way, means it's now Saturday UTC. And I really, really, really try hard to make sure the podcasts come out at the latest at Friday UTC. There have only been a handful of times in the entire history of this podcast where I haven't made it out by Friday UTC. Looks like this time, adding one to that count, it'll be out, you know, it's Saturday 1 UTC right now, because all the delays and things, and I didn't get started too late, and blah, 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 and I've been interrupted like a dozen times, and I'm repeating this segment, and blah, blah, blah. So, sorry, it's out late. But still, one per week, going back years, we're not missing a week yet. Anyway, Iran. I see nothing but a positive in Iran, but it's still early days. You know, the tensions are slowly de-escalating, frankly, despite the wishes of hardliners on both sides. Great. Good. Let the progress continue. It's still really delicate. Could be derailed at any time. But so far, so good. And I think this is one where, you know, Obama's been playing it right so far, completely in contrast to Syria. And frankly, I think the Libya was a complete screw-up, too. You know, so in contrast to those, I think he's doing the right thing in Iran. We'll see how it plays out. Who knows? Who knows? Congress. It doesn't do much. And we've criticized them for that. But it's not always a bad thing to not pass this law and that law and this law. And, you know, the GOP may be splintered and receive, you know, certainly has received quite a beating for what it's done and not done over the last year. But between them and a president who, frankly, did I say frankly like 8 times? I don't know. Who's the president, despite the wishes of his left wing, or the worst fears of the right wing, the president is actually pretty moderate. And in conjunction with whatever nonsense has been going on in the Congress, the end result is the deficit has been coming down consistently for a couple years now. And so I guess that's good, although there's a long way to go before you have like a balanced budget, let alone, you know, reducing certain areas of waste, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, hey, progress. But it also seems clear that we've probably been doing it at the cost of the current state of the economy. The economy would be better off without some of the cuts that have happened, and that's the trade-off there. But it has shown that even though there is some pain involved, we can get by with sequester-level cuts, which, after all, really are only reducing the government back to the size it was a few years ago. It's manageable. Meanwhile, other things putter along. But, you know, the biggest cost, though, of the do-nothing Congress is not any particular law that hasn't been passed, or even the routine business that doesn't get done. No, the biggest cost of a do-nothing Congress is that it encourages more power grabs by the president. And this isn't a partisan thing. Presidents of both parties routinely grab power whenever given the opportunity. And they rarely, if ever, give it back. But guess what? If Congress doesn't move in areas that are important to the president just moves without them. Sometimes by doing things that suddenly, hey, look, the executive can do this on their own. They don't need a law to do this, even though for generations it was thought that you would need a law to do that. Hey, look, you know, it's part of protecting the country. Yeah, we can do it. Or whatever reason it's made up. And sometimes it's just ignoring laws that have already been passed. You know, daring anybody to stop them. I mean, that's what happened with George W. Bush and some of the FISA court stuff with the initial wiretapping programs. Obama has certainly done this stuff, even on Obamacare. Like, there are certain deadlines that were hard-coded into the law that it's like, never mind. And there are plenty of other examples. But the point is here that these kinds of executive power grabs happen more often when you have a Congress that isn't active itself and a Congress that doesn't jealously guard its power. Because what you want here, of course, is that when a president of either party...
You are not talking to yourself again.
Yes, I'm still talking to myself.
So you should talk about trains.
I should talk about trains?
Yes.
I'm talking about executive power and the Congress right now.
Talk about Portal 2.
Not no. Right now.
Yes, yes. Yes, now.
Yeah,
are you going to be a blue guy or an orange guy?
I don't know. We'll decide in a little bit.
You told me which gender from a one.
Blue. So I'll be blue.
And
Amy will be orange.
I know there's only two twins.
Yeah.
In Portal 2.
Okay, can I finish?
If you want to.
Okay.
Then this time talk about Portal and trains. And train simulator.
But that's not what I'm talking about.
Try to talk about that, because that is all about which computer are you going to build it on? Okay. Or are you going to do it on this computer?
Yes, I'll play on this computer, and Amy will play on the computer in her room. And then you can walk back and forth between us to see how we're playing.
Yeah.
But let me finish talking about what I was talking about.
No, talk about trains, simulator, but Portal first.
Nah, not right
yes,
now.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yes, yes.
I can't talk about all that.
I think we need to take another break for a second. Then I'll come back and hopefully finish up. Someday I'll finish.
You want
to talk But you know, the more you come to talk to me, the longer it'll take me to finish and then... for us to play together. Okay, we'll be back after this. Or not after this. I'm just... take a quick pause. I'm not going to play a break.
No? You are pausing.
Yeah, I'm pausing. Back in just a second. Beep, beep, beep! So, while you were gone that time, I stopped it. And then I got Alex settled again so he'd be quiet. And then I went back to check the previous segment, because I always have been checking the previous segment before going on to the next one, and found out that I'd overwritten the first segment with the... well, not the first segment. I'd overwritten the previous part of this segment with the second part of this segment that I started after the last time Alex interrupted me. And the other one was gone. So I, like, panicked. And I'm like, And I spent all kinds of time doing, you know, seeing which copy I had saved, using undo, doing this, doing that, and creating other copies of the thing. And eventually, I found all the bits, and I put it back together. So I didn't lose anything, although I thought I'd lost something. And I was like, oh no, I have to re-record it again. But I hadn't lost anything. I put it all back together, and then I played through all of it again. Oh, and somewhere within there, I... a new DVD set for Alex had had arrived in the mail of that I hadn't thought to order until after Christmas, but I thought I'd ordered it for Christmas. Anyway, it's, you know, 4 hours of high definition video of trains. So I got him set up with that downstairs, and then listened to the whole thing, and then found out that, in fact, I had not actually overwritten anything. It had just inserted the new recording about 3 seconds into the old recording. So everything was still there, just with the second bit in between the first bit, and anyway, it's all settled now. Calm, calm. You know how I was saying at the beginning of this how the holiday is season to just calm down and relax and blah, blah, blah? The last couple hours while I've been doing this podcast have not achieved that. Broke the iPad again. Recorded a whole segment. Found out the microphone wasn't working and I hadn't recorded anything. Started to record it again. And then thought I overwrote it. Eventually recovered everything. And then found out I didn't need to do all of that because it was all there to begin with. And I wasted a bunch of time. Oh, I should start. Breathe. It'll all be okay. And we'll finish this up. I'm really almost done here. Anyway, what I was saying before Alex came this last time to talk about Portal and trains and other things is that what you really want to happen, what should happen, is have a Congress that jealously guards its prerogatives. And when a president does something that really should be handled by the Congress or I guess the courts, Congress should fight that. They should pass new legislation that that clarifies exactly what they meant. So if the president starts evaluating, you know, doing some of this nonsense like what the NSA has determined what reasonable is to, relevant. What relevant is basically everything. You know, the Congress can come back and say, no, that's not what we meant. Here's what we meant. Or, in more extreme situations, just impeach the bastard. You know, if a president is actively doing something which is contrary to an existing law or is ignoring parts of an existing law that they have the duty to uphold, in either one of those cases, they absolutely positively should have been impeached. Now, of course, I recognize that between this and my view on war powers, every single president since FDR probably should have been impeached. But come on, at some point, Congress needs to be holding these folks accountable. But they don't. Because what happens is, you should have. The president goes over the line. And the entire Congress, Republicans and Democrats together, should be outraged and say, I don't care whether or not I agree with the president on the substance of what he did. He did something that he shouldn't. He did something that was a congressional prerogative. And therefore, we together, Republicans and Democrats alike, will take action to stop this. But of course, that's not what happens. What happens is the president's party in Congress supports the president. Because on the merits of the issue, they may agree with what the president did. So they were like, okay, well, he used a different method to get it done, but what he's doing is what we want to have done. So great! And this comes back to what I was saying in the last segment, at least I think I said it in the last segment, when we were talking about tenets. I actually believe process is important. And that getting something done that I agree with, if it's not done following the correct process, still shouldn't happen. The process is important. And unfortunately, Congress doesn't feel that way. The majority of Congress doesn't feel that way. They're like, you know, hey, the result is what we like. Who the hell cares if it's done the right way? And I think that's a real shame. Because a lot of the value, what's supposed to be the value in our congressional system, is that Congress defends its power against the president, and these branches are in opposition, and the Congress keeps the president in check, and the president keeps the Congress in check, and the courts keep them both in check, and that's just been breaking down. And it's one of, you know, those of you who've listened to the show a long time have heard me rant about this before, but I think You see that again happening this year, 2013, and the fact that the Congress is less active is actually leading to more of an increase in presidential power yet again, and the Congress needs to defend its power. But of course, they don't. Next, drone warfare. Just saying drone is a distraction. The method used to kill is irrelevant. The real issue here is that we're actively engaged in killing people in half a dozen or more countries across the world at the moment. And yes, the usual suspects, including me, complain about it regularly. But the public at large doesn't seem like it could care less. It just happens. Quietly, in the background, no declarations of war, no significant congressional debate. And yeah, I know there was the original post 9/11 authorization for the use of force and the occasional renewals of that authorization, but there's very little specific talk on the specific places we are engaging in war and basically treating it with the gravity it deserves rather than leaving it all up to the president. You know, if we're going to be actively involved in lethal actions against our quote-unquote enemies, the entire population should be very aware of exactly who are these enemies. What are we doing? How are we doing it? And I don't mean specific operational details, but how are we deciding what we're doing? What's the goal? What's the end state? How do we think that what our current actions are doing will achieve our eventual goals? All of this should be very openly debated and not just sort of done and no one cares. Of course, I shouldn't say no one. Plenty of people care. But it's not a continual front page issue, and it should be. And maybe the decision in the end is, yes, we should be doing this stuff in Yemen and Afghanistan and Pakistan and wherever else we are operating at the moment. Maybe the decision is a big fat yes. But it should be a very active debate. It should be something we should be considering as one of the highest priorities of public discussion. And it's just not. And even more to the point, you know, we should be owning up to exactly what we do, and especially when we make mistakes. Yes, we've killed a number of bad guys. Quote-unquote bad guys. But there are also a bunch of people that we've called combatants that we have got no proof against. We don't even necessarily know them individually. We just know they were in the wrong place in the wrong time doing the wrong activities. And I'm not sure about all of those guys. And then, this is going out into Halo further, there are a bunch of people that we actually know were complete innocents that are killed by our actions. We know we've killed children. We know we've killed people who weren't involved at all. And we should be very publicly owning up for that. And frankly, you know, this is something I've mentioned before at various times in the past. We should see the front page picture of the mutilated corpse of the innocent 7-year-old child that we killed. Without censorship. That should be splashed across the front page of CNN and the New York Times in vivid color. And if the entire population can't look at that and say, you know, I know we killed the wrong person and that's an innocent child, but because of X, Y, Z, Q, it's worth it. We have to do it because of this. And if we can't say it's worth it, even when we look that in the face and look at the innocents we're killing, then we shouldn't be doing it. And the way we hide this and make sure that, there was collateral damage, is shameful. And even then, most people aren't aware of it in their, you know, going about their business. Although, once again, it's not being treated with the gravity it deserves. And yes, the decision might be, yes, we need to do this. But if we're going to make that decision as a country, we need to look at it with our eyes open. And with our eyes open means not looking away from the innocents we kill and not pretending they don't exist. We need to look that in the face and say it's still worth it for some reason. And frankly, at this point, I don't think it is. I think we could stop this entirely, and it not only would not hurt our safety, it would probably enhance it. Because I think at this point, we're creating more enemies than we're saving. And Alex is back. Couple more things and we're done. Almost done, Alex. Almost done. And hi. Almost done. I need like 5 more minutes. 5 more minutes. Okay, look. Mom's here to take you again. We'll take another one of those quick stops while we get settled. Boo, boo, boop! Okay, I'm continuing again. Those weren't all actual breaks. Those were just, this is all one long segment. Just quick pauses. Alex is still here, but he's playing now. TAC. Overall, it's been a slow year for TAC. Yeah, there have been some new products. Sure, there's been some talk of delivery drones and things like that. There have been advances on a number of fronts, but nothing really earth-shattering. But I'm going to harken back to the Snowden stuff we talked about earlier, because I think it lit a fire under many existing businesses and also many entrepreneurs who are just starting up to start new projects based on protecting privacy and security. And these may take many years to bear fruits, but it may take many years to bear fruit. But it's 2013 that I think kicked off a lot of these efforts. And frankly, not just to protect against government overreach, but also to protect against private overreach. And although it's known by, you know, almost everybody in the business, it's not exactly a secret. I think the general public is only vaguely aware of just how much is known and tracked and shared and sold about them in the private sector. I mean, it's the fundamental business model of both Google and Facebook. And for that matter, many, many others that are less well known. You know, I'd like to think that someday there'll be a Snowden-like figure who blows the lid off of this on the private sector side of things as well. In a way, not by making things public that aren't necessarily public right now, I guess, because a lot of this is out there, if you care to look. Put it out there in a way that actually resonates with the general public and lets them understand how their data is really being used and how widely it's held and how many people can see it, and maybe that can resonate in such a way that the business models of the information gatherers and sharers can be disrupted and replaced by something with a lot more control put in the hands of individuals. But I suspect that much like the Snowden revelations, the majority reaction is just sort of, oh, they do all that stuff with my data? Okay, fair trade for the services they give me. Thanks! You know, and I guess if the majority are okay with it, so be it. But I think we're poorer because of it. And I think most folks just don't fully understand the extent to which their information is out there and all the ways that it can be used and how many people have access, and not just at the companies they're doing business with. I mean, I think people generally, unless they have taken the time to know better, think that if they engage with a specific company, that whatever information results of that relationship stays with that company. and is used very specifically, narrowly, for the specific purposes that they gave that information. And that's just not true. It's just not true. You know, first of all, if a piece of information is collected about you, you should be assuming that it's used in every possible way. You know, you turn on location services on your phone because you want to use a nifty map app. Guess what? That means they know where you are all the time. And maybe there's nobody there tracking where Sam is this moment. That's not the kind of worry that you necessarily have, but it means they know the places you usually go. They know the places you've been. They deal with this in aggregate, of course. You know, yes, they could conceivably look at this on an individual basis, but more often it's used to, in an aggregate way, figure out how to better manipulate you into buying things. And okay, maybe that's an okay trade-off that you're okay with, but there's the, just like with the federal government, the fact that they're not abusing that data now doesn't mean that the data can't be abused in the future. And I think people should be a lot more stingy about this data than we are. Of course I say that, but I'm not about to turn off location services on my phone because I use it every day for all kinds of things. But, you know, I think, and this thought has been coming to me on a number of occasions over the last few months. I think that a business, you know, there's this whole thing about, well, business records, and once you've given up the information to a third party, there's no longer any expectation of privacy. I think that's a fundamental problem right there. And I think there should be. I think, you know, we have this idea of the privileged communication with doctors and lawyers. I frankly think that that same level of privilege should be the default for all business relationships. If I interact with you on a purchase or, you know, you're providing me a service or whatever, I think the default assumption should be that that information is between the bare minimum number of people required in order to provide that service. And that that information can't go beyond that relationship without the express consent of the individuals involved. You know, and I'm not necessarily arguing for like ham-handed legislation to try to enforce this by government, because they'd just screw it up more. But I wish that was the norm, the expected behavior, and that people were outraged when that didn't happen. And when you provide information to one person and it ends up going elsewhere. But that's not where we are. But I'm hoping that at some point there'll be somebody who can make the case for why having all of everybody's information everywhere might actually be a bad thing, and why we want to be more careful with that and encourage services that you don't get the free thing in exchange for giving out information of yourself, and instead you pay for it. Pay for your damn email provider. Pay for your search engine. You know, give me a search engine I can pay $5 a month to that's as good as Google, you know, or $10 a month or whatever. Let me subscribe to it and not have them suck my information like a leech to use for everything and sell to whoever and do whatever they want to. I don't know, Google may not be selling a lot of the information directly, but they're certainly doing a lot of stuff and selling it indirectly through advertising, whatever. Give me the option to pay and opt out of that stuff. Give me that option, please. Anyway, enough about tech. Obamacare. Too early to tell. Ask me in 5 to 10 years. Yes, 5 to 10 years. I think it really will take that long to judge the long-term ultimate impacts of Obamacare. It may even take longer. Sure, we can talk right now about the political ramifications on, you know, has the botched rollout hurt Obama? Or as the actual policies start to roll out over the next year, Does that improve the Democratic position, politically, or does it make it worse because it continues to get botched, or whatever? Or does it, or probably even more likely, do people who already like it more, and people who already hate it more? We can talk about that kind of short-term thing, but in terms of the long-term effects on American healthcare, a decade. Ask me in a decade. That's how long it'll take to really get good information on, has this improved healthcare overall amongst the American population? Next up, sports and entertainment. Yeah, right. I know nobody buys it. I don't follow that stuff. You know I don't follow that stuff. I have absolutely nothing to say on those things. So, finally, this is going to bring it to a close for today. After, almost an hour and a half. Yeah, one of these short solo shows. I know. This segment that I'm recording a second time because I lost the first time because the microphone didn't work, it's looking like it's about 30, 40% longer the second time around I did it. Oh, well. Anyway, tune in next week. If Yvonne and I manage to actually get our acts together, unlike this week, we will look back at the predictions we did a year ago and see how well we did. If you want to look back, you can... I keep all of the old episodes back to the very beginning in the RSS feed. So you should be able to go back in your favorite podcast listening software, scroll back through the episodes, look approximately at the beginning of January 2013, and you'll find the prediction show that we did, as well as the review of the prediction show from the year before, but that's probably less interesting. And you'll find it, and you can listen to it, and then you'll know what we're talking about next week. We'll review it and say what we predicted. But, hey, go back and listen to last year's show. It might be entertaining or not. And you can also find it on my website if you switch the category to Curmudgeon's Corner and then just go back through the history until you get to January. But it's probably easier in your whatever you use to listen to podcasts. Unless, of course, you actually listen to the podcast by hitting play on my website, which I know some people do. Anyway, the review of last year's predictions next week, and the week after that are new predictions for 2014. So tune in then. In the meantime, have a good week, everybody. Enjoy the rest of this end-of-the-year period. Do try to slow down. Relax a bit. And enjoy the good things around you. Even when there's all kinds of stressful things, too. It's important. And, sorry again for not getting this thing out until Saturday, UTC. But, things happen. Anyway, until next week, goodbye.